Blog Talk Radio.
This is All is About Wine, the talk show in the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. That's www.facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
It's the old boy.
All right.
We still have the old ending on that. You know, when the bus pulls up, it has all the marketing things on there. And they're like, no, that's wrong. It needs to, we need to take off some of those and add the all the other ones. So,
Every time I hear the bus people screaming and yelling, I always think of the Muppet Show and Kermit throwing his hands around and all that.
Yeah.
I always think of Kermit whenever all the bus people are yelling. Yeah. Now everybody else will.
maybe we license that and use that part too. That would be good.
All About Wine is in for another show.
April 7th,
1922. If you're listening to the show in 1922, good for you. Yeah. You're a time traveler.
Yeah.
Now, well, another show of All About Wine with information and just some interesting facts. We don't have anything, no guest, but we got a guest next week.
Mm-mm.
And I'm working on other guests that hopefully we will be able to get over the next few weeks here. In fact, we've got some English sparkling wine wineries that we're talking. And Melissa is the one that's helping us book those. And so hopefully that'll happen soon. We also have Nathan, who is a climate change expert, who is going to be talking to us hopefully soon about how wines are being affected by climate change. And let's see, what else we have here? We've got a restaurant. We got some people from Georgia, not the state, but the country, who we're trying to get on the show. And, all sorts of stuff here. So, hang in there. Stay with us. We've got some great guests coming up and some interesting stuff that should be a lot of fun. Let's see. Our guest next week. Let me see what. I was trying to see what his expertise is in case anybody wanted to write us any.
Oh, that's Chris.
Chris, okay,
Chris,
there you go.
Kunstall, co-founder of a bar of
wine cocktails.
Yep.
And so, in fact, they're supposed to be sending me some recipes for wine cocktails. So I will be posting them up on our Facebook page. And if you have any questions for Chris, then get them into us, and we'll be more than happy to address them to him, if you will. If you want to give us some of the any question, but he has a bar and they do wine cocktails, and he said they're pretty popular. So we'll talk to him next week. Something else that was here. Oh, yeah, I want to talk to you about this, Mike, and so everybody else, you can listen in on this conversation. But Vine and Stein magazine is from the Fayetteville Register, Fayetteville County Register. And I get their email, and I've been getting their email for some time, and I don't know why, but I'm happy I do, because it's an interesting email. But Becky from Vine and Stein magazine wanted to know if we wanted to advertise. And I told her, we don't advertise. We, most of the people is word of mouth and stuff like that. And I said, we really don't have a budget for advertising or anything. We wouldn't know where to advertise and to hit those people, you know,
right,
who were, and, you know, so I explained to her and she said, oh, she understands completely. I told her, thank you. I've been getting the email of the Fayette County Register for some time and I enjoy it. So she wrote back and she said, I'll tell you what I'll do. She said, if you would like to write up a little bit about All About Wine, she would be happy to throw it in one of the issues as, you know, just a write-up about us and tell us about it. And I said, well, great, thank you. So, and the reason I'm talking to you, Mike, if you would like to do a little write-up, a little history in your free time, between 1 and 2 in the morning, we'll get that sent out and she'll publish that in the Fayetteville County Register. So
something short, like 14, 15 pages or so would be good.
Yeah. Don't go over 15. Yeah. And
less than 15. Okay.
Yeah. Keep it less than 15. Don't double space though. Keep it less than 15. Yeah. So, but yeah, just, you know, a little history, what we do and how people can find us and stuff like that. But she says she'll publish it for free. So,
wow.
I said, thank you, Becky. And I told her we'll get something out to her. And then when I told my engineer about it, she says, you need to have Mike do that. And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. And then I started to think, boy, she doesn't think I'm capable of doing it. She wants you to do it. And so, but I didn't call her on it.
I could do like my perspective, you know, of that part of it. And then pass it over to you and you can fill in some stuff and
add a few things at the end. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in between, that, you know, like,
yeah,
something that, just
sounds good.
And,
yeah.
And they can so, yeah,
do a do collaboration. Something. Yeah. Collaboration. There you go. Do an email and send it over to me and I'll finish it up and I'll send it in to her then. So
yeah, sounds good.
All right. Sounds good. But I just, I'm going to say that before I forgot it, and I would have forgotten it, and so I'm going to do it.
Cool.
So you can start doing that, and then once you get it to me, I'll finish it up, and I'll get it to her. But Vine and Stein magazine, they come out with it. Fayetteville Register.
Was that Fayetteville, Georgia, Arkansas, North Carolina, South Carolina?
That is... I don't know. Fayetteville County Record... 979
okay.
Is the area code.
Let me get my team of experts here.
Yeah, pull up the 979. Yeah.
Oh, it's in Texas.
Oh.
What? College Station, Bryant. Hold on a second. I gotta look this up here.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I thought they were in the Carolinas. I really did. I thought it was in the Carolinas. Well, cool. Even better. Yeah.
Fayetteville, Texas. I guess it could be it. Fayette County Clerk is in, that's LaGrange, Texas. I've been to LaGrange.
Have you? You got a connection there.
Fayetteville. Yeah, many years ago, but.
Yeah.
That's like, that's where I think it is. Yeah, I think so. LaGrange, Texas. Up there. Not that bad.
No. We are good. So we know.
Okay.
So get a little thing started and send it to me. I'll finish up and we'll send it to her. So she's going to do it for free because she's a really nice lady and she likes what we do. So good. Cool.
Very cool. Thank you.
All right. So Let's see, what else are we going to talk about tonight? We're going to talk about, let me get some facts and figures for you here. Fun facts and figures about wine in this country. I don't know if you all did National Drink Wine Day. That was back in February. I try to keep you up on that stuff and tell you when all that stuff is. But in fact, let me dig out my book here. I see my book. That's okay. There, I got it. And my calendar from my book. And let's see what we got coming up this next week here. Okay, this is April. And this is April. Okay, today's the 7th. National Burrito Day is today. National Empanada Day tomorrow. Saturday, National Winston Churchill Day, and that's for the cigar. For all of you out there who are, is after the famed British statesman, but it's for the cigar. Palm Sunday coming up this Sunday, and that's also National Siblings Day, so get your sibling a bottle of wine. Monday, National Pet Day. Tuesday, National Colorado Day. Wednesday, National Peach Cobbler Day. And then next Thursday, National Gardening Day. So we got all sorts of different celebratory days coming up in this next week. And let's see what we got. This month of April, I didn't tell you last week, but month of April, Michigan Wine Month is April. Also, it's British Columbia Wine Month. So there's a couple months to celebrate there. And a couple of things to celebrate for the month. And nothing else. The next Palm Sunday and Ramadevami. I'm not sure. It sounds like a Muslim holiday. I don't know. And then next Thursday, when Chris is our guest, it's Tannet Day, which is actually a well-planted grape around the world. The Tannet grape is really planted a lot. But that's next Thursday. So there you go. That's what's coming up over the next week here. But National Wine Drinking Day, or National Drink Wine Day, and I need to say that right because it seems so often that we will have a National Drink Wine Day and then all of a sudden we'll see something that says National Wine Drinking Day because they do that. They just throw different names and have them at different times. So National Drink Wine Day was back in February. But here is some reports or some information for you that you may find interesting. 770,322,162. That's the number of wine gallons produced by the U.S. wineries in 2020. And that's the latest year they have all these statistics on. That is according to the 2022 February report from the TTNB, Tobacco and Trade Bureau. So they keep reports for everything, beer, wine, spirits. Same report says that the top 14 wineries out of the 770 million, the top 14 wineries produce 418,281,881 gallons. So it's like, oh my gosh, they way more than half just from the 14 top wineries. We knew that. We've talked about how that works, and we've known that. 895,000. That is the total number of California's grape acreage in 2020. Again, that's from the California Department of Food and Drug Agriculture, the California Grape Acreage Report, and that's from 2022. The leading type of varieties that were planted out of that 895,000 acres. Chardonnay, number one, and Cabernet Sauvignon, number two. Which, you know, we can almost guess that and be pretty accurate. 147,413 Let me say that again. $147,413. That's the maximum price of a bottle of the world's most expensive wine, Domaine Leroy Musigny Grand Cru. That's per standard 750 milliliter bottle. That same wine's average reported price, now this isn't for anything particular, but that same wine over the years, average reported price, $43,610. Makes you shiver, doesn't it? I mean, it makes you just, you're sort of shiver, it makes you just shake your head and wonder why. Well, to be included on winesearchers.com's list of the world's most expensive wines, by the way, a wine must have at least five offerings spanning at least four vintages, two of which must have been in the last 10 years. So that's how they get it. Wine Searcher, I've looked on Wine Searcher quite a few times for stuff, and that is how they get their price for the most expensive. Five spanning at least four vintages, two of those in the last 10 years. Valentine's Day by the numbers. Here you go. $558,000. That's the price of the most expensive bottle of wine ever sold at a Sotheby's auction. That was in 2018. Again, this is according to Wine Spectator magazine. That was for a 750 milliliter bottle of Domaine de la Romane Conte, a 1945 vintage. 11,053. That's the number of U.S. wineries as of November 2021. So this is a rather recent statistic here. 11,053. Now, of those, 4,763 are in California. That's down. That really is down. I used to quote statistics on the number of wineries, and California used to have over 5,000. Now they're down below 4,000. I bet. Well, there's two factors I think I would have to consider. The pandemic, for one, probably caused it, and bigger wineries buying out smaller wineries. Every single day, it seems like, I see a report of another small winery being bought by a big winery. But 11,053 in the United States and 4,763 just in California. 21. That is the national minimum drinking age. And it might be different states for beer, but the national minimum drinking age for wine. This was established in 1984. I bet y'all didn't know that, did you? States that bumped the age up to 21 to comply with the new minimum drinking age back when it went up saw a 16% average decline in motor vehicle crashes. Think about it for a second. 18 to 21-year-olds were drinking. When they quit allowing them to drink, it saw an 16% decline in crashes. Substantial, really. 3.09 gallons. That's the total wine consumption per U.S. resident per year, according to the Wine Institute's 2020 estimates. And this per capita estimate is based on Census Bureau figures. The organization says the estimate would be higher if it were based on legal drinking age population. And there I gave you the stats for over 21, and then they say that. And then the last one, 1 billion. Number of gallons of wine consumed collectively by U.S. residents in 2020. 1 billion gallons of wine this country drank in 2020. All right, people. And Florida is a big drinker. When I was teaching my classes, I had statistics, updated statistics, that I used to report to people about how California was one of the biggest wine-drinking states in the country. I don't know where they are now. It's been 6 years plus since I've closed the winery, and so it's been about seven and a half years since I've dug out stats on that, but California is right up there in the toward the top, if not the top, bouncing up and down every once in a while. And the Tampa Bay area had a distinction of being one of the biggest drinking areas of wine in the state of Florida. Again, I don't know how it stands now, but at the time it was right one of the biggest drinking wine areas in the country and one of the biggest drinking wine states in the country. And so therefore, we really was holding our own here in Florida. So that is some statistics to start off your day. Okay. This isn't about wine, but I saw this and I'm going to share this. Since I just gave you some statistics about wine, I wanted to share this a little bit with you. This is about beer. I know the show's about wine, but since we're giving you some wine statistics, I'm going to tell you some stuff about beer here quickly. It says American craft brewers have rebounded from the pandemic with an 8% annual growth this last year and 24.8 million barrels of beer produced in 2021. Florida, well, actually, Tampa Bay area has the most local breweries of anywhere in Florida. There are 99 breweries in the Tampa Bay area, and that contributes $3.1 billion to the area economy every year. Wow. Tampa was number 7 in the nation producing craft brewing companies last year. So Tampa's right up there. I don't know what the others are. Well, let's see. Maybe I can click on this. Let me click on it. Yes, it will. Okay. What do we got? Let me see. Okay, here we go. Top 50 craft brewing companies. Yuengling out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania, number 1. Boston Beer out of Boston. Number 2, Sierra Nevada out of Chico, California. 3, Duvall Mortgat, USA. I don't know what they make, but they're Paso Robles, California, Kansas City, Missouri, and Cooperstown, New York. Gambrinus, excuse me, out of Berkeley, California, and Shriner, Texas is number 5. And then Bell's Brewery, 6. Canarchy is 7, Teasonal Brewing Ventures 8, Stone Brewing 9, and Sweetwater Brewing 10. And then it goes on down from there. It gives all 50. I'm not going to go through all 50. Everybody's going, yay! So those are the top 10. The top 10 craft brewing companies. And the biggest overall brewing company, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Molson Coors, number 2, Constellation, number 3, and Constellation owns a lot of wineries. Heineken, 4, and Pabst Brewing, 5. Diego is 6, and Diego owns a lot of wineries, too. Wow. So, those are your overall 6 overall. All top brewing, they have a list of 50 on those too, which I am not going to go through. But let's go back to the statistics before we got into this. Craft beer increase easily exceeded the overall beer market, which grew by only 1%, whereas beer grew by 8%. 9,069 breweries were operated at the end of the year, and openings exceeded closures nearly fourfold. That's quite a statistic there. You're seeing breweries all over. Newport Richey, little town, just a little Main Street town where I live right here. Although we're suburbs all over, but Newport Richey downtown has like 3 craft breweries right in the little town itself, 2 of them right next to each other. So it's 9,069 were operating at the end of the year. And even though it's a bounce back year, they're still struggling. They expect by the end of the year, some of them aren't going to make it. It's make or break year for many of the breweries. Hopefully the easing of restrictions will let them be able to keep operating, as also with wineries. The easing of restrictions, with any luck, is going to be able to keep wineries open. Napa Valley
Wine.
We got
yes. Oh, sorry. While you're talking about stats, we have a message come in from Facebook from Carolyn. She says, here's a number for you. Kansas City Royals. Hold on. Here we go. Kansas City Royals win opening day 3-1. Yeah. Okay, settle down, folks. And there will be beer. So, yes, I bet there will be. Congratulations.
Yeah, there you go. Congratulations, Royals.
This was the first day today, wasn't it? Everybody
yes, it was.
Reported
today's
the,
first day. Yeah,
name.
Everybody's playing today. Yeah. The first day of the regular season started today. Huh, yeah. Well,
that, on the news. I was like, hey, congratulations.
That piqued my curiosity. Tampa Bay Rays, let's see what they did today. And
yeah,
it doesn't all here.
They were
no, they don't play until tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, they play tomorrow at 3:10, so they didn't start today. But okay.
Yep.
Oh well,
yeah,
congratulations to the Royals.
The Cleveland Guardian.
Cleveland Guardians.
Won against the
Cleveland Guardians. Yeah. Okay. Guardians.
Guardians.
That happened last year because that happened last year because they said that Indians were offensive. So after much complaint over the years, they finally got around to saying, okay, it is offensive, and they changed it to Guardians. But then they had a problem with Guardians too, because the local roller derby team is called the Guardians up there in Cleveland. And so the roller derby Guardians were complaining that the baseball team was still in their name. And I don't know. I guess the baseball team won because they're called the Guardians now. So. Congratulations, Royals, on you're in first place now. If the World Series were held today, you would be going to the playoffs. Which, the way the Royals have been playing, that might be the only day they do it. Sorry, Royals or Kansas City fans. My engineer just brought me a King Stag California 2019 Merlot. I'll tell you what, this bottle weighs about 20 pounds. This is a heavy bottle. Jeez. King Stag Merlot, it says, inspired by the noble creature's grace and natural elegance, King Stag wineries reflect the proud lineage and rich terroir of California's most acclaimed wine-growing regions. This majestic Merlot envelops your senses with dark cherries and plums, setting a background for mature tannins and moderate acidity. Its superb balance and refined character make this wine a noble presence, whether enjoyed with food or simply relished on its own. That was rather poetic. King Stag. Pretty bottle, too. It's got antlers all over it and everything. It's a pretty cool bottle. I mean, on the labels and stuff. All right. First thing we want to do is look at the color. A nice garnet color. Not real thick, but most Merlots aren't real dark. But nice garnet color. Not getting a lot of aroma yet. Let's see what we got here. Oh, there we go. I'm getting a little plumminess on this. That's about the only thing. You haven't tried it? A little plumminess is on. That plumminess comes out in the flavor, too. That's unusual. You usually don't get that in the flavor. and some dark berries, blackberry, a little blackberry. I'm doing a second sip. Oh, very good. I thought it was when I was going to pick up more alcohol than what I did, but it's nice. What's the alcohol level on this? There it is, 13% alcohol. Average for red wine. Not outrageous. So, very good. It's King Stag. A nice red wine that I will, thank you, be enjoying with my program tonight. Or joined with. I don't know why people end a sentence with. It always drives me crazy. Next thing here is a list of wineries, top 25 wineries in Napa Valley. Not Napa. Best Bay Area wineries to visit in 2022. This is out of the San Francisco Chronicle. Obviously, I've been telling you I do it. I subscribe to that. This is a list of the San Francisco Chronicle. Top 25 wineries, Spring 2022, Best Bay Area Wineries to Visit. That's the title of this. And I'll try to put this on the Facebook page so it will be up there so y'all can see it. It should go through pretty easily. Okay. Arias Wines, located in Hillsburg. And I'm going to tell you the winery, and I'm also going to tell you the place, and I'm also going to tell you how much they charge for tasting. Which this is one of the things that jumped out at me on this list here, the cost for tasting. I'll tell you at the end why that is. Arias Wines in Hillsburg, if you're going to go up there, it's going to end up costing you $40 for tasting, $40 tasting fee. I don't know what you get for these tastings. I think a lot of them give you a flight of wines. And flights differ. So that really isn't a whole lot on that. The next one here is Antica, Napa Valley, located in Napa Valley. Says here that the $45 tasting fee on this one will get you a private guided tasting of four Antica wines and a hearty spread of cheese, fruit, salami, and bread. Well, that's cool. They give you something to eat with it. $45 tasting fee, though. Jeez. That's $90 if two of you go to that. They better give you some cheese. Okay. Brock Cellars, located in Berkeley, California, just across the bridge from San Francisco. $10 tasting fee there, which is reasonable, I think. Corson Winery in St. Helena, which is in Napa. $75 tasting fee. Definitely. Oh, unbelievable. $75. You know, a lot of these places, though, will credit you that money toward a purchase. So, you know, which goes to say that the wines are probably expensive. But and it says that they're, let's see, flights of wine may include vintages that are 10 or more years old, but still, $75. Faust Wines, $75 for that tasting fee. Frog's Leap, located in Rutherford, which is up in Napa, $45 tasting fee. Hendry Ranch Wines in Napa, $50. Hudson Vineyards in Napa, $65. Idlewild Wines in Hillsburg, $40. After me saying some of these other prices, you hear 40 and you're going, wow, well, that's cheap. Iron Horse Vineyards in Sebastopol, $30. Joseph Swan Vineyards, located in Forestville. Not quite sure. Russian River, here we go. In the Russian River, $20, but you got to drive a little bit further north for that. Keenan Winery in St. Helena, $50 tasting fee. Lola Wines in Calistoga, $25 tasting fee. Mary Edwards Winery in Sebastopol, $25. Mount Eden Vineyards in Saratoga, $30. Porter Creek in Hillsborough, $30. Preston Farm in Hillsborough, $35. Reeve Wines in Hillsborough, $35. Ridge Vineyards in Montebello, they're charging only $20. Robert Sinsky Vineyards in Napa, $40. Rhyme, R-Y-M-E, Rhyme Cellars in Forestville, $25. Saintsbury Winery in Napa, $35. Schramsberg Vineyards in Calistoga, $50. Storybook Mountain in Calistoga, $50. And Unti, U-N-T-I, Unti in Hillsborough, $25. And, you know, like I read on some of those others, those tasting fees, you get other stuff with it. Some of you get little cheese trays, and most of them allow you to apply the tasting fee toward a purchase. And so a lot of it is understandably reasonable. But I was going to explain to you why you're getting so much of these costs. And it all boiled down. Napa used to be free. Most all the wineries. You'd go in there and you can taste two or three wines, four wines, five wines, and they would be happy to pour you, and they would usually be pretty generous with their pours. And it was fun. When I lived out there in California, and I used to go up to Napa periodically, and when my mentor started teaching me how about wine, we used to go up there at least once a week, Napa, and then down to Livermore and Sonoma and stuff like that. Everybody was free. I don't remember paying for any of the tastings. This was in the late 70s. What happened was that the idea caught on, and I want to say, well, actually, they're older now. The people are all much older now, but at the time, the young people thought, let's rent a limo. Let's 8-10 of us get together and rent a limo. And the cost of renting a limo spread out over 10 people was reasonable. So you would rent a limo, and you would go to Napa, and you would stop by the wineries. And 10 people, 12 people would pile out of the limo, go inside, have a tasting of five or six wines, get back in the limo to the next winery, pile out, have some more wine, and do this. Go up and hit 8, 10, 12 wineries during the day. They didn't have to drive. They can drink as much as they want on the tastings, and that was it. And it would cost them the cost of a limo. They weren't buying anything. They were just drinking for free, basically, all day long, just and having a good time riding in the limo and going around having free wine tastings. And the wineries are, and this became very, very popular. And Napa Valley started to pick up. It started to get busier and busier on top of that. And the wineries said, we can't do this. We can't afford this. We can't afford to be giving away this much wine. And it's substantial. We were charging $350 for tasting at the winery. And at $350, which is nothing, at $350, we were still going through a lot of bottles. We get a busy weekend, and we'd throw away 2-3 cases of bottles that we went through on tastings. And so, you know, you think about it that way, at $350 or even whatever for the cost for tasting was really reasonable. And so Napa says, we're going to charge this much for tastings. And they started out, they've gotten up there, though. I mean, last time I was in California was, 10 years ago. Let's see, this is 20, no. Yeah, about 10, 12 years ago. And the wineries I went to wasn't this expensive. They were like, you know, $20 and some, $15, $20, $25 was most expensive. But $75 for tasting, I can't see the justification behind that. Unless you plan on buying, unless they offer the price of the tasting to be deducted from anything you purchase. And like I say, a lot of them do that. I was going to check and see what they're charging in other places. I found a couple. And New York, Finger Lakes area, the same as Napa now. You can tell some of the more popular places because their prices are up there a little bit. You can also tell ones that make high-end wine, if you will, more expensive wine, their tasting prices are higher because they got to cover the cost. But overall, you find just about all the wineries in the Finger Lakes areas that charge. I checked out Hudson area, Hudson River area, and a lot of those charge. I also pulled up what I could find in Virginia, and a lot of those charge a nominal fee. And I also tried to find other obscure states and stuff like that, and they didn't list tasting fees, either that or they didn't have tasting fees. I couldn't tell. So it's becoming something all over. Now, it might have changed because of the pandemic and they weren't getting the people in and all that. I don't know. I don't know how that worked on there, but it was interesting that everybody now is charging because they can't just pour all the wines for free. You know, you can understand that. Okay, I will put this list up on the Facebook page and so you can get a look at it. It's an interesting read. It tells you about each of the wineries and websites and stuff like that. So you can go check those out if you would like. Okay, there's some other interesting and pertinent news that I want to cover with you here before we... Oh, geez, it's already quarter till. Let's see where... California's fine wine is surging. They're selling a lot of high-end wine, even with the pandemic. I think people are doing it simply because they're home and they have an opportunity to do it, and they are having it shipped to them, and fine wine is really becoming a thing. But prices for the top wines in California rose by 32% in 2021, and people are buying it, not just, well, champagne and wine and all that. It's really has jumped up in total sales. There are more than 20 sub-regions up and down the state, but Napa accounts for more than half of all the regions of wine sales at 51.2%. And so because of that, Oakville is just the south end of Napa, and Oakville takes another 26.5% of the market, and that leaves 18 subregions that are splitting about 23%, 24%, less than that, about 23% of the rest of it. So, but high end wines are becoming very popular and are being sold and drank all over now from California. Excuse me. Okay, let's see. Okay, that page is done. I can go to the next one. And I say jump around these different ones here and find out what we got here. Mexican wine. I'm going to check on Mexican wine. I said that, and I pulled up some stuff on Mexican wine, and I'm going to check on it further because I will be talking about Mexican wine in a couple of weeks since we have a guest next week. So I will talk about told you about that. France has another appellation. I told you about all that stuff. Okay. Let's go up here to this. And supply chain crisis. It's still an issue, a major issue. Getting bottles, getting shipments and stuff like that. We don't hear it anymore. It seems like it was the concern du jour for a while. And then Russia's invasion of Ukraine became front page news and we forgot about other stuff. Not to downplay, please believe me, not to downplay the invasion and all the terrible, terrible things going on there. But supply chain is still an issue and there's still ships sitting out in the ocean waiting to come in and still trying to get food on the shelf and still trying to get products in. And it is still hurting the wine industry and the wine labels and bottles and all that. This isn't the article I wanted to tell you about. Let me find the one that tells about but well, it is an issue with bottles more than anything right now. Bottles are becoming harder and harder to find. And when they do, they are very expensive. It is creating an added expense to wineries that they've never had to deal with in this amount of cost for bottles. Oh, geez, where is this? I don't know. That's why I should write down stuff. I'm just looking at the stuff says, oh, I'll remember. And guess what? I don't remember. No, that's not what I wanted. All right, well. But bottles, and I'll run across it here as I talk. So I will tell you more about it shortly here. Let's go into something else. Constellation brand buys Lingua Franca winery out of Willamette Valley. There's what I mentioned earlier, that so many wineries are being bought by big, big conglomerates. And that's why I think the number of wineries is becoming less simply because of that. Oh, here we go. Wine bottles are getting really expensive. It says that a alternative, wine in a box, could be what we're looking at because glass bottles are getting so expensive. It says that it's from oil to the glass bottles that's been used for so long. Used to be the prices would be, let's see, wheat continuous contract. It was a wheat contract, which down 1.64%, everything from wheat to oil to glass bottles. Now everything is surging. This is 10 things winemakers won't tell you. The cost of bottles in the United States has risen by as much as 20%. And it's also the suppliers of the glass bottles aren't as many as there were in the past. We've lost some of those during the pandemic. And one of the things too that's affecting it is oil. Everything seems to be made from oil, and that is jumping up in price unbelievably high, as anybody out there who drives a car knows. And so that's becoming an issue there, which affects glass. And it's also the cost of glass to ship it and all that. So your wine will cost more. I mean, I'm not saying that to scare you. I'm just saying that as a fact. You are going to be paying more for wine, not because of the wine itself, which, yes, in some cases it is, but mostly glass. Glass is really getting expensive, as is a lot of stuff in the supply chain for wine bottles. So look forward to that. Let's see. Something else here. This one here. It says, this is what I was looking for. If it will open for me. Yes, it will. This says that the situation is unprecedented because of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. It led to energy prices that are surging, and the increase in the price of dry goods have already hit headlines a month ago because of post-COVID in the supply chain. But the hike is going to worsen. Price lists all increase at once on April the 1st. And you may have already noticed that we're 7 days into April, and you may have said, wait a minute, last week this just cost it. Well, you're right, it did just cost that. They're saying the director of the Bordeaux Family Cooperative Group says that they're living from day to day. Farms with 5,000 hectares of vines and 300 member growers represent about 10% of the Bordeaux region. And he said they're extending deadlines and increasing costs, and people are organizing the bottles they have to turn them into raw materials for suppliers so that they can make more bottles. And it is a serious, serious problem. The pressures on the supplies have led to a very, very challenging time, which I've never experienced for dry goods. This is the director of sellers of Chateau Neuf de Pop. And they're saying that the Russian invasion of Ukraine has brought about a lot of volatility and unpredictability. And it says that production costs that increase with energies and supplies bound to have an impact on cost prices. And the question is, how far will this go before you actually find a stop or an answer or some way to get it taken care of? So, it's happening, and it's nice. It's not Russia. Russia's not causing us to pay more for a glass of wine. I mean, that's a stretch, but it is affecting the supply chain, it's affecting a lot of stuff, and it is going to get worse before it gets better, I'm afraid to say. It's not going to be a magic cure. If they happen to call peace over there, it's going to be something else, because it's still, the supply chain is still an issue. The wildfires that hit Napa, we don't think of anymore because it's over and it's done. But the wineries that are rebuilding are having a nightmare trying to get stuff together and trying to put it all back to good. They have met obstacles in different places. They have had labor shortages. The labor shortage that they had in the vineyard has passed on to the wineries themselves, and they have not been able to find the workers they need to rebuild the wineries. And they have had money issues because, well, they're still complaining, as are many places in California, about getting payment for the fires and stuff like that and getting help. And also they're looking at the cost of insurance now. that they have to take care of, which is absolutely killing them. In some places, it has quadrupled from 30,000 to 40,000 a year up to about 150,000 a year, which, because of the wildfires, they created a problem where the insurance companies had to pay so much, so they have to recoup their money. It's they're trying to rebuild them. Some of them are having good luck. Some of them are progressing and rebuilding. A lot of them are scaling back on their original plans of what they were going to build, and they're building something that's not quite as opulent or as large, but is just as good, and they're building it a lot faster so that they can open up and get back in business. So wildfire legacy is still going on. It's from a couple years ago, some of these wineries from the wildfires from 3 years ago, and we're still seeing problems with it and still seeing issues. Okay, let's see. Okay, not that. And let me see. Oh, that's the one I just looked at. Trying to get these things sorted out here, and it's not always that easy. This is from yesterday. Now, today's Thursday. From day before yesterday, there was a truck carrying harvest bins in, where did they say this was? Kangaroo Island. Australia. Yeah, a truck carrying harvest bins, because we're not harvesting here. Was involved in an accident that killed a young driver, sad to say. The trailer and the load of wine grapes ended up in the ocean. The cellar will be closed, or the winery will be closed in respect for the young man that was killed in the accident. What winery is he? It's not saying the winery. Oh, here we go. False Cape Wines. And so, excuse me. So, an accident in Australia that took a life down there during the harvest. Let me see. This is one. I knew there's something. I'll tell you about this, and then we'll call it a night. Frost damage in France. I don't know if you have seen pictures. Have been everywhere. San Francisco Chronicle had a picture of it. Even the Tampa Bay Times had a picture of it. It was tragic. Warm weather has hit France and all of Europe. Last week, first part of March, they had some really warm weather, which caused bud break everywhere, not just on grapevines, but on fruit trees and everything. It just, everything started to bloom out. All the trees were going, yay, 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 it's warm, we're ready for the summer. And then a devastating frost hit. I mean, one of the worst April frost since 1947. It's coldest April night since 1947. The temperatures dropped to minus 9 degrees Celsius, which interprets to about 20 degrees, right around there, Fahrenheit. I think maybe a little bit colder. But grapevines, as will any other fruit trees, cannot handle that. It's frost for vineyards can be mitigated by putting on sprinkler systems, and that freezes the, well, orange trees, everything, actually. But turn on the turn on the sprinkler system, and the water freezes on the vines, which basically holds the temperature at 32 degrees. It doesn't let it drop any lower because that's the temperature it freezes. And so it sits right there. But there's other ways to do it. There are some pictures out there. If you look it up, the frost in France, you'll see vineyards with candles lit by each of the vines. And they're burning candles to try to keep the vines warm so they don't freeze. And there's also wind fans that they turn on that will keep the frost from settling on the vines. And this is also fruit trees, anything else. It was, it was a serious problem out in France this past week. It was, again, the worst frost since 1947, did I just say, or was it? Yeah, 1947, and the second year in a row that they've had a frost issue in April. They had a problem last year also. They recovered from it, and it was able to come out with a good vintage. The vines are less advanced in the growth this year, though, than they were in the previous year. And the frost event was shorter and less intense last year. But this, they said that the weather returned to positive figures on Monday, and this is set to last until Easter, which is a week from this coming Sunday. So it hopefully will warm up there enough that they can, from having another killer frost. And this is actually a killer frost. It's killing all sorts of plants and trees and stuff like that because of the warmth that they got in the 1st of March. So our thoughts are out there to France and all the people trying to grow crops and everything, and obviously the vineyards, but all the other stuff out there. And some of the vines are a little bit more advanced, but the frost's not going to hurt them, but they're still looking at, they figure, 20-25% loss before everything's over. So, okay, there you go. And I think I am done for the night. Let me look at one more thing here that I had a note by. No, that's not the one. That one. No. I'll read this article and tell you about it. Scientists discover the key to terror. That's what France talks about all the time. We don't talk about terror too much here in the United States, but I'll read that article and I'll tell you what they have unlocked in the discovery of the key to terror. And next week, we have a guest. So tune in next week, and we'll talk about wine cocktails and how I'll have some recipes for you, and we'll talk with him for a while.
Sounds good. That is next Thursday, which will be April the 14th.
Right.
I like when it starts like that. It's easy to figure out.
Me too. Yeah, I always like it when it's easy like that.
Yeah. I think that's all there. I was looking to see if there were any other notes I had. Okay. Well, nothing else to add last minute. We'll let it close the show down until next week, and when we have our special guest, which would be Chris Tunstall. Chris Tunstall. I had it written down here too. God.
Yeah, I think it's Chris.
Chris Tunstall is. He's on our show page, so I already plugged in that show. Join us next week, either live or on the archives, and we'll have a good live guest again next week. Thank you all for tuning in. have a great week and a great weekend. Be safe and enjoy it. And we'll see y'all next time. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be safe.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine, with your host. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on the show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Yeah, close out of cute things. Go back to. I don't think I'm still. There we go. Turn that down. I should have one button. Oh, green room.